www.lotusaudio.org.nz. Planet FM is a platform that champions diversity. Not all our programs reflect the views of the station. We encourage you to consider a wide range of information from trusted sources when making decisions about your health.
You have a message received 23rd October at 1:36 p.m.
Yeah, hi Tim, it's me. Hey, that was a great piece of interviewing with Bill Watson. That was profound. It really was. I mean, I really enjoyed that. I thought that was a very, very significant interview. And I just hope that you'll do another one with him and you'll continue on. I like your style of doing it too. I thought that was that intimacy and, you know, that was great. It really was good. It was real.
I cleared that yesterday from my phone. It was weeks old. Okay.
We've come into a time where technology is assuming the status of a god. We know that the transhumanists' goal is to overcome death. They want to be gods. And we've been warned, Tim. I mean, it's all hidden in plain sight, like these movies and all, you know, Batman and one thing and another. We all have to assume a share of the responsibility for giving up our power to these techno high priests without really comprehending their motives and their values. And that's happening at this time because it's a shift in the ages, okay? And like Pisces, Aquarius is a symbol, okay? And symbols are frequencies. They're used to send us information. And they're being used to manipulate us by sending us signals of coming actions, okay? And these actions are all about social engineering. That's what's going on right now with this bid for the New World Order through the Great Reset. And COVID, I don't deny the reality of the virus.
Yes.
And some claim that it's a bioweapon, but whatever the case, it's basically a distraction from some of the other stuff that's going on that's going to change humanity in ways that we're not going to like. It's all about controlling people by manipulating their energy and engineering consent. I think it's the basis of predatory programming, and it literally is a form of black magic. Subliminal mind control, it's a shell game of misdirection, and they're expert at it. They make their plans based on artificial intelligence, they have strategies laid out, and they're using AI to drive the tactics behind this global chess game, and it's because it's changing very rapidly right now. And one of the transhumanist goals, as you know, is to connect the human mind to artificial intelligence. And what they're going to do is they're going to be experimenting on profoundly autistic children. And the number of autistic children is ramping up exponentially right now.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I am Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth.
In the studio this morning, I have Bill Watson, and Bill has been here 2 weeks ago, and he's here with us today to follow through, and it's good to know there are soul fans out there, and say, kia ora, Bill.
Thank you, Tim. Happy to be back.
Bill, folks understand empathy and compassion, so what more can we add to this understanding of the soul, because it's... Once we recognize that we are a soul, that every human being has got one, then great changes can happen.
I suspect, Tim, that most of your viewers realize they have a soul, but there are many perspectives.
Do you think that most listeners think that we've got a soul, Bill?
Well, let's put it like this, Tim. I hope that they do, because it's an important piece of who we are, and there are many perspectives. It's sort of like the blind man and the elephant, you know. each one has an insight into a larger totality that is beyond the view of all. And so I reckon we get closer to the truth when we're able to suspend judgment about all these different perspectives in our own exploration of the nature of soul. And that's what we're about today.
Very good. Okay. So where do you want to kick in? Okay, right. We have the situation of two souls here in the studio, and we're talking.
Sure. And we're talking to other souls, mostly, I presume, to the angelic soul group, which is what describes humans. And angelic describes our particular soul path, which is service to others. And if we listen to our inner voices, to our higher self, to our guides, we stay on the path and in the direction of service to others, although third density is mainly service to self. And it's mind that gets us into trouble, Tim.
I hear you, because we can get distracted so easily. You mentioned guides. A lot of people's antennae would go up on that one.
Yeah, guides are really
discarnate beings.
Exactly, that help us, that have basically loved us from another lifetime, that are on the other side, that have some interest in our achieving our highest potential. And the guides, I mean, I've been aware of my guides since I was pre-kindy. I actually saw them. I knew their names, and I could describe them to you. And one afternoon, I opened the front door, and I let them in. And I sat them down at a little table, and we had tea. And my mother happened to be talking with a friend on the couch that was visiting. And she told me later that they thought we had a great imagination than I did. And I said to her that, really, they were as real to me as you and your friend were. So, and I know that they've been with me ever since. It's very important to have a relationship with your guides.
Because the ancient Greeks used to have muses, and the muses were, from what I've heard, they're called mind angels who whisper into our ear, and they're the ones, in many cases, who send through poetry. And also, we may come to an understanding that when Pythagoras or Plato took in information, it could have been actually a download from these muses to them. And when you have a look at writers today of real profound books, spiritual books, and even for movies, the few movies that are really spiritual, these could be a download from these invisible angelic muses.
Sure, they're part of the angelic hierarchy, and both poets and musicians have a connection to the muses. They are divinely guided, you could say.
Yes, yeah.
And even when people go off track, in other words, the mind leads them off track, it's there's nothing more joyful than mind, or painful than mind, or more useless in a way. The brilliance of your mind, Tim, won't save you. It'll only make you terribly certain. The mind is in service to the body, to the lower self.
Yes. And it can be distracted again. I'm using this word because today, the titillation that is actually broadcast on TV and through songs and God knows where else, it's always to allow us to get more involved in indulgences, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's the question of signal-to-noise ratio. And the noise comes off the devices of all kinds. And the signal is actually coming from the soul. And it gets weaker and weaker. The more the mind says, oh, I think I'll follow this path, but that path leads you into the weeds, really. The more you follow your instinct, your gut hunch, your inner authority, the more that you make decisions that are correct for you. The mind is really clever, and it's important not to let it call the shots about what direction to take in life.
Yes, again, I think we must have some sort of moral compass, for want of better two words, really. I'm with you there, because today our world is awash with, shall we say, programs to distract us, and the minds of the 7.8 billion human beings.
Absolutely. You know, you can turn left by following your intuition, Tim, and your mind might give you a million reasons why it's better to turn right, and they might all make sense. But the more you follow that instinct, that gut hunch, which is your inner authority, the more you make decisions that are correct for you. So I think that soul is what's that little voice inside that's trying to tell you what's the right thing to do in this instance, because life is all about choice. That's what this third density Earth is about. It's a school, because we live in a world of polarities. and inner and outer, male and female.
Black and white.
Yeah, push something long enough and hard enough, then it turns into its opposite. And we contain the potential for both the light and the dark. And every choice, however small, is a test. It moves us in one direction or another.
You mentioned 3D. You say three-dimensional.
Density. Density and dimension are two different things.
Clarify, please.
Okay. Densities are levels that souls cycle through or attain. Third density is one of the properties of third density is polarity, which means we have choice. Fourth density, that's all different. People wonder, what is it like in a fourth density world? Well, there's a lot of speculation about that. From what I've read about what's awaiting us in fourth density, Tim, it's a different ball game. It's far more harmonious. In third density, we live with the illusion that there's no link between consciousness and matter. Michio Kaku wrote a book about this. In fourth density, consciousness can be matter. Light is gravity. Optics are atomic particles. Matter is antimatter. To understand the next level, just reverse everything. And the universe is all about balance, so the answer must always be zero. Zero is infinity. The illusion here in third density is that there is separation. It's the alteration of perception that turns the axis and creates the illusion of distance. For example, you can reverse that and understand that there's no distance between us and Alpha Centauri. Riemann's cut. If you warp space and time, you travel by bringing your destination to you. In fourth density, you have the capability without the mechanical technology. Okay? What's perhaps most important about fourth density is we'll be able to project into the future and see the consequences of any choice that we make in the present. Okay? And that's something that we don't have here.
That's a good one.
It is, because there won't be any of, if I had only done this or if I had only said that. Okay? And there'll be opportunities also to work on what you're passionate about and with like-minded people without interference or betrayal or theft of IP or other painful experiences. Eh?
Okay, well, thank you for that. Now, Bill, one of the things that I've come over the last, I don't know, 20 years is that we are here to spiritualize matter as human beings. And so we're living in a physical vehicle, our temple, that I call. And what we're here is we're to spiritualize everything in relationship to our body, which means that we're here to become more conscious and make our body more conscious, speed up the electrons that we actually become more light or like light. And so
it's the distractions that get in the way of that happening every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the distractions can be little things, you know, like
Sex and drugs and rock and roll.
Yeah,
let's get to it.
Those are little things. But what are some of the bigger things? They're some of the things that really cause deep emotional hurt. And I'll tell you a story, okay? I was part of a research team in Taiwan back in 1998, and we were conducting a study, government-funded by the Taiwan government, of the effects of flower essences, which is bioenergetic medicine, on the emotional patterns of Chinese patients. And one of my colleagues, Chinese woman that I'd only known briefly, was intensely psychic, and she downloaded some information about me that was given to me through my boss who translated. She said that three lifetimes ago I had made a very big discovery, that I was on the edge of fame and fortune, and my results were destroyed, and I was discredited by the establishment. And something cracked inside, and it has been under repair ever since. And I thought, oh, geez. And it's been a very deep wound that's taken a long time to heal. That's exactly what she said, and it was very useful information because it helped to reveal a pattern in my life. And aside from experiences in this lifetime, why I've had a deep-seated fear and distrust of the establishment for a very long time. So essentially, she's helped me to discover a negative pattern created by wounding that occurred several lifetimes ago. And that's what happens in fifth density, is that we have an opportunity to make decisions about what we want to work on when we come here. Fifth density is, you were talking about Akashic Records last time. That's basically what fifth density is about.
Okay, Bill, you're thrown in previous lifetimes, my favorite subject.
Uh-oh.
So, and that's to come in another interview in the future. So you opened up that part of Pandora's box. Well, it's not Pandora's box to the Hindus or the Buddhists, and even certain sects within the Jewish religion. So did you want to mention anything about this now, or do we move on?
It wasn't to Roman Christians either, Tim, until the Council of Nicaea, when in 432 AD, or 425... Sorry?
When Constantine.
Yeah. So that basically got excised from the canon. And dogma, of course, is man's best friend, Tim. So that's what we're living with, is a kind of a false notion of what happens to our soul when we die. The fifth density is not really a geographic location. It's a thought wave, Tim. Yes, and so yes. So the Tibetan Buddhists would call it the Sambhogakaya. The Christians would call it heaven and hell. There are all sorts of different names for it depending on what religious tradition. Basically, it's a place of contemplation where we have an opportunity to review this life and past lives and make decisions about what we want for ourselves in the future. In other words, it's an opportunity to set an agenda for the next lifetime.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, there's so much here because, I mean, I realize that in some ways, as we evolve up through the so-called system, that our bodies are a little like atmospherian-type bodies and ethereal, or even we live as a waveform, so to speak. So there's so much profundity going on. Now, you mentioned guides and the higher self, but what I want to know is, how do we go inside when we are faced with important choices?
Mm.
We talked a little bit about meditation last time, and then there's prayer as well. Do you wish to offer up something more to allow us to steer ourselves to a higher frequency of being?
Yes. Going inside, how do we go inside when we're faced with important choices? Your source of inner authority will determine that one, Tim. And we're all different. When I say we, I'm talking not just about you and I, but many people. It's about your source of inner authority. It's not made-up authority or a philosophical one. It's basically part of your biological mechanism. It's your wiring, and it doesn't really require your mind at all. It allows you to operate correctly as yourself, to navigate confidently and skillfully on this plane of reality.
And?
Okay. Well, the sources of authority could be solar plexus, like mine, or sacral, like yours, or there are several other possibilities as well. There's what's called splenic authority, there's self-authority. Since you and I have different sources of authority, when we're operating correctly, we're making decisions in a way different from each other. And I can tell you more about that if you want.
Okay. I mean, you said mine was sacral. How do you know that?
Well, the sacral authority, when you have to make a decision, when something comes up and you have to decide in the moment, in your gut, you get a uh-huh or an uh-uh. Okay? It's a grunt. And it's immediate. It's in the now. Whereas with mine, it's different. I have to ride the wave. And so I have a policy that if somebody says, would you like to do this? And it's something that's going to have consequences. I mean, it's not like, do you want to go to a movie? I can decide that. But if it's something that has consequences down the road, I'll say, thanks for that. It's interesting. I'd like to sleep on it. Or if it's not something that involves somebody else, but it's a long-term decision, I may have to sleep on it for a long time, okay? And when I say a wave, it's sort of like I come in with uninformed optimism about it. I think, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Then I have to ride the wave down to informed pessimism.
Yep, I understand that, too.
Yeah, so when I come out of that, I've got both the highs and the lows, and I'm in a position now to make a fully informed choice. But not everybody needs to do that. I mean, the sacral are lucky in that sense. They can just say, oh, yep, that's right, because my gut tells me so.
Yeah, well, you see, I've learned this recently about M-braining, multiple braining. We've got a head brain, a heart brain, and a gut brain. And Vivian Berry is very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And she allows us to align all three brains so that instantly we get the full message that there's this coordination of all three, should we say, human brains, and I like that because they're all congruent. So, Bill, thank you for that. Can you give me an example of how our decision process could be different?
The decision process that most people use is to let their mind decide for them. but sometimes it just seems impossible. It's like, I just don't know what to do. There are some what you'd call technical ways to address that. And one that I'm quite familiar with, because I lived for years in China and I've been involved in research with the Chinese for years, is I Ching. I mean, there's some people who use tarot. There are other methods as well. But if you're really important and you're stuck on something, using the I Ching as an oracle can give you not necessarily a yes or a no, but a reason why, and that will guide your intention. So that's one way. But I think that quieting the mind, you know, like I said earlier, you know, the mind will give you a different reason why not do what the gut wants you to do. And, of course, the whole notion of distraction that you've raised is a critical feature, because the mind will drown out the voice of the higher self, drown out the soul. And that's what we've got to be aware of, is that the only way that we can really expect to get good information from the soul is to nourish it, to take care of it, and meditation is one good way to do that. But sometimes people just have blockages that prevent them from doing that. And there are other ways as well within the realm of bioenergetic medicine and dealing with that. I think last time I mentioned briefly about flower essences. That's certainly another way.
Most definitely, yes. I got a quick story on the I Ching. I once went to a person's place, an elderly woman, and she had the coins out and she was throwing the I Ching. And I just silently watched her for a while. And then when she'd finished and she'd had a little book and she read it, she said, uh-huh. And I said, oh, can I do that too? And she said, sure. And she said, okay, you ready? And I said, yep. And she gave me the coins and I threw the three coins. And what came up, it was the simple. And so I had a look at the book and I read, you are essentially follow a simple path. And she said, well, Tim, what was your question? And I said, I didn't know you had to have a question. And so the I Ching just saw me for what I was, simple. And so that verified to me that the Chinese knew something way back. And the I Ching is something to do with a binary code of some sort, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really deep. Yes.
It has to do with our DNA as well.
Okay, yes.
That's a very important connection. So in other words, this ancient document that it predates antiquity has a genetic code built into in the 64 hexagrams. But let me tell you a story to move us from coins to flower essences, because there's the connection that I had with one of the clients that we had in the study that I was talking about in Taiwan. And I had a Chinese woman come into me who looked like she was about 70 years old, and in the course of discussion it turned out that she was 48, and she told me that she had not slept for 2 years because her only son had died in a motorcycle accident, and she couldn't get to sleep. So the insomnia, she had, you could tell that she hadn't slept in a long time. So I asked her what she did, and she said that she'd closed the curtains and make the room dark. And she opened a little string bag and pulled out some coins, the Chinese coins, the ones that you'd use with the I Ching that have the square hole in the middle. And they were all polished. They were shiny. And she said she'd throw the coins on the floor in the dark, and she'd spend the night on the tile floor picking them up, trying to find them. And I gave her a flower essence, just one. And in 2 weeks, she came back, and I didn't recognize her, because she'd slept, and basically her soul had released that from her.
The pain,
yeah.
Sorrow.
Yeah, the mental anguish. And it happened just that fast. It doesn't always happen that fast. Like, for example, when I've worked with cocaine addicts, sometimes I've had them on a single flower essence for 3 months, like go through two or three bottles before something happens and we can change the remedy a bit. And so it depends really on the issue, but all of these emotional issues block development. And it's, I mean, I've seen parallels of this in group activity as well. It's like one thing we say in organization development is process issues always block task accomplishment. It's like if you have interpersonal stuff going on in a group, it's going to slow down getting to the objective. And it's the same with the soul, you know. If there's all this garbage that builds up on top of it, you know, my father beat me and I, you know, or the kids at school bullied me or something like this, and we're carrying that baggage around, that's blocking transmission. That's the noise, and the signal gets cluttered.
Yeah, thank you. Isn't it a soul evolution process, an actual process in which we hear of the astral existence? What is all this? Because a lot of people don't know.
Yeah, that's what souls are designed to do, Tim. There are several different models or theories about that. And unfortunately, there's even no consensus on densities, you know? What constitutes a density? Mm. But, you know, with soul evolution, it's a bit like the generations, you know? It's like, you're a baby boomer. What year did it change to Gen X? It depends on what book you read. Different authors put forward different ideas, you know?
Yeah.
And so there are different ideas about these densities and everything. But definitely, that's what souls are designed to do, is evolve. And we are at a place in time on this planet where there are souls that are ascending, that are graduating, essentially. They're moving to the next level.
Mm.
And there will be some that decide that they really like this place because they like power and control and they don't mind about, you know, corruption and one thing and another. And so they'll probably be staying around for another few hundred thousand years.
That long?
Could be.
Yes.
Yeah. It's interesting about the dates, I suppose you'd say, or the periods. I mean, we've entered Aquarius. I think most astrologers would agree that because the cusp of an age is about 120 years. You've got an age is 2160 years, and we just came out of Pisces, which is about universal compassion, and it's something that humans couldn't get. It was just too etheric.
And that was when Christ essentially started that off.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
That was the event that kicked it off. Well, I think we're experiencing a kickoff event now, but it's sort of like Christ was the light energy that kicked that off, but humans couldn't live up to the promise of that universal suffering notion, you know, the higher consciousness. But here we've got a very different energy that's kicking it off with singularity and with
transhumanism.
All of that, yeah. It's
pollution.
All that stuff. It's pretty dark.
They say that the greatest pollution on this planet at the moment is that which is between our ears.
Well, I think that's a fair statement because there's so much clutter in people's minds. They're not thinking, they're not using their mind properly.
Yes.
The mind is great for telling others our story, but it's not great for making decisions. And that's where humanity is getting into trouble, in my opinion.
Well, we go back again, and I think we did mention it 2 weeks ago, with the Socratic, Socrates, mm-hmm. in ancient Greece, where he said we have to question everything. We have to be curious and wonder, and we're not doing that these days. We're becoming more, we have to obey or to comply. I see so many people now just going along with life. Their antennae don't exist anymore. They're not really awake to what's going on.
Yes. Well, Socrates, there's a lovely quote, and it goes like this. Wonder is the feeling of a philosopher, and philosophy begins with wonder. No god is a philosopher or seeker after wisdom, for he's wise already. Neither do the ignorant seek after wisdom, for herein is the evil of ignorance, that he who is neither good nor wise is nevertheless satisfied with himself. Does that work?
Yes, it works. Good. Okay. Yeah, well, you see, what I like, and the best one from Socrates, was that when he was actually put to death and he had to take, is it hemlock?
Hemlock.
He had to take hemlock. The government of Athens forced him to die and he had to take poison. and his flippant statement to them, he said, okay, well, you can kill my body, but you can't kill my soul, my psyche.
That's right.
And that's, I think this is very pertinent for what we're talking about here now, which is lovely. I love serendipity. It's really, really wonderful.
I do too. And Socrates, of course, soul is going on. And the Greek government, well, where is it today?
That's right. So do you want a quick recap of different views of soul?
Yeah, the Greek word for soul is psyche. And it's also the word for butterfly, which implies that it's capable of transmutation or metamorphosis.
Yes.
Okay, now soul, the word soul in Latin is anima, and it means wind or breeze or breath. So it's the breath of life. It animates, it moves us like wind moves a flag. It stirs our passion, our desire, the peaks and depths of experience. And so, as you mentioned earlier, you know, we experience it in poetry and music as well. And I...
Well, all I can say, can I cut in?
Yeah, of course.
The Hindus have to believe in something, and also the Buddhists, because when they die, they say they are reborn into another body. So, obviously, there's an essence going from one body to another. And so there's 1.3 billion Hindus, and there's about 500 million Buddhists. So that's another big percentage who believe in soul, just like the 2.4 billion Christians. I think that's quite exaggerated myself. And Islam, even though there's Sunni and Shiite, there's 1.8 billion of them, and they believe in the book of Genesis and the Bible. They still believe in soul. So there's a huge number of people on this planet who believe in soul. No doubt about it.
Can 6 billion people be wrong, Tim?
Well, something inside them, intuitively they know that there's something else that's greater than themselves or their body.
Yeah. Yes, they do. And it's that intuition that comes from the higher self that tells them. And it's insistent. It may not be a loud voice because it's been being drowned out by all of these distractions, but it's an insistent voice. And the world soul isn't lost, but most people, or many people, don't realize it's there.
Yes.
And the German philosopher Novalis wrote that the seat of the soul is where the inner world and the outer world meet. And I love coming originally from America. I've been here more than 40 years now, but the American poet Auden might have been responding to Novalis when he wrote, "The center that I cannot find is known to my unconscious mind." And he finishes that stanza with, "I have no reason to despair because I'm already there."
Yeah, great knowing that, isn't it?
That's a poet, you know, who's able to make those kind of connections in such simple words.
Yeah, Gary Zukav, he wrote about the seat of the soul too.
Yes.
And he had a previous book, The Dancing Woolly Masters, and that went into the East, particularly in China. And so again, there's the East has got something that we, in many ways, in the West have lost. Particularly in the last 70 years, Christianity has fumbled around and dropped the ball and that sort of thing. They haven't made that connection. Hence, there's something like about 8,000 churches just in the UK that have got an average of around about 9 people per church. So I was in Europe last year, and it's the same in Europe. People aren't going to church because they've become bored, when in actual fact there's a profound story of this being who came here 2,000 years ago, and we've lost the gist of the story, and so we've looked for other things, like looking into our smartphone.
That's true. You know, I spent a good part of my educational career, I did doctoral studies in East-West psychology, so that whole side of it is of great interest to me. And what I've noticed is that there is a drop in attendance in Western churches, and it's partly because people are waking up to the fact that this whole planet is a church, and that it's the Church of Gaia in a way, and that the natural world is a, what'd you say?
A cathedral of profound beauty.
Absolutely, Tim. And it's like I essentially left the Christian church when I was a teenager because my church was at Kelly's Cove. I'd go surfing on Sundays and my mother thought I was going to church because I felt the presence of God where I was out in the water. And I didn't feel it in a church, and my knees didn't like kneeling and sitting on hard benches and listening to a boring sermon. So what I resonated with when I went to university was transcendentalism, Thoreau and Emerson.
Very much so. And fantastic, those two human beings.
And they were very much into soul as well, but they also understood there's a soul in nature as well, and that there's a world soul.
Anima mundi.
That's right. And the world soul is crying right now. It's in distress. And this is part of the problem we're facing as humans, is that we're picking up a lot of that. And if I can just say that there actually is a flower essence. It's called Green Cross Gentian. It's very specific to pain for Gaia.
And quickly, you're just going to have to mention for Gaia to allow people to recognize Gaia.
Gaia is another name for Earth. It's actually for what you'd call the astral body of Earth. That's the way I understand it anyway, that it's a higher density Earth. And that means that it's sort of like the soul of Earth is suffering along with us. And we pick up on that. And that's part of, I think, what's causing some of the problems in the world today.
I'm speaking with Bill Watson, who has been living in New Zealand for 40 years, originally from the United States of America. And we're covering the soul and all the implications and connections to our spirituality and why we are here on this planet at this particular moment, and how we can heal ourselves in connection to our family, community, and nature. Let's talk about the here and now, Bill, and the role of soul in the science fiction movie that we seem to have found ourselves in, and it's starting to fray at the edges.
Yeah. Which science fiction movies? I can think of a couple of them. One of them was They Live.
That's a pretty profound one.
And Roddy Piper, before he died, he said They Live wasn't a science fiction movie, it was a documentary. And I tend to agree with that. The other one that comes to mind is Blade Runner, which was based on Philip K. Dick's 1968 novel called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, I think. And that's where the replicants rebel against their human creator. And that's what we're seeing right now. They haven't started the rebellion, but that movie was a very early and very accurate, I think, portrayal of corporate control and what the modern occult arts can do in the real world. And, you know, there's a lot of black magic being used right now. That's what this is about. And soul, we've talked about soul in modern times and how it's been reduced to a physical mechanism by modern science, which is actually creating a world of machine-like creatures. And of course, that's the denouement, that's the end game of the Enlightenment, which 410 years ago started with Bacon and Descartes and Galileo basically saying the world is a machine. That's a myth, okay? And I think we need to look at other myths that might be better,
transcend that.
Yeah, going back to my Chinese interests and background, in Taoism, they think of world as sanctuary, sanctus being holy. So world is sanctuary. And I think that's a far more appropriate myth. And there's one philosopher, his name is Hendrik Skolimowski, and he's written extensively about what he calls eco-cosmology, which is, cosmology is a way of looking at the world. It's like the world is like a machine. the world is like a sanctuary. So that's psychology in the West has been treating soul like a mechanism that can be predictably programmed to sell products, to manipulate public opinion, or even worse, MKUltra, to program killers and erase their memories. So that's the downside. On the upside, there's been great advances in psychotherapy, which in the Greek words means soul care, whereas psychology means knowledge of the soul. And psychotherapy is about increasing self-awareness and enhancing the quality of life of the soul. There's been big advances in my lifetime.
Yes, yes. Yes, because you also mentioned Joseph Campbell.
Yeah.
And how he's looked at all the myths of old, and he says they no longer deal with present reality, and we need to come together to listen to each other's stories, create new ones. And he was the person who influenced George Lucas of Star Wars, and who brought through the Force.
Yes.
And unfortunately, Disney has done all its best to close the Force down and stop human beings knowing about the Force, particularly children. But the Force is present, and it's something so profound that it encompasses the whole of existence, and it must naturally have an effect on us all if we believe.
Well, we've seen the connection of Disney to New World Order, Dark Side, all of that, and it's quite understandable that there are Luciferian objectives at play here. And, you know, they want to trade on probing into the dark recesses of the human psyche and getting people to make wrong choices. But the therapeutic process I was talking about is about shining the light of understanding into those recesses and to get people to understand. Because why? Because to understand is to forgive. And forgiveness has a liberating effect on the soul.
It certainly does, Bill.
Yeah, that's one aspect of the transformative process.
Yes, because I know that when people forgive and when they cry, as the tears run down the cheeks of your face, it actually cuts away the seemingly grime, and you realize that this major release and letting go is profound.
It is profound. I've seen it many times,
yeah.
And I've felt it a few times myself.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and that's often to do with what's called shadow work, which is to do with reclaiming and integrating elements of our psyche that we've either disowned or in some way can't associate with. And this is to do with unrecognized emotions or attitudes that we have. And this is the kind of work that I do with people. And I try to tie it in as much as possible with the transcendent or the spiritual dimension of life. Back in the 90s, I taught for several years at the Institute for Transpersonal Psychology in California.
That would have been fantastic. I'd like to talk to you a bit more about it, because there were some very, really interesting, shall we say, teachers there.
Yeah, the core faculty was pretty amazing, actually.
Completely. The ex-Flower Power, all of them, basically.
Yeah, we were. Right. So basically what we're doing is offering a wider context to soul development. And there are other modern psychologies that do as well. Isagioli, of course, with psychosynthesis.
Yes, that's right. And then there's Stan and Christina Groff as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, during that period, I was also the director of the Spiritual Emergence Network. We used to work with people who were in psycho-spiritual crisis. In other words, they were
Kundalini rising when they didn't realize what was happening?
Yeah, and the vast majority of people who raise their Kundalini don't realize what's happening.
That's right.
And of that, and some of it's spontaneous.
I agree.
But oftentimes it's drug-related. And one of the things that we used to do is go to the Fillmore when there was a good band playing.
Yes.
And we would rescue people who were having a really bad trip before San Francisco General.
Yes.
Got to them and gave them a jab. And
what sort of jab was that?
It's lithium. Basically what it does is it eliminates the highs and the lows. Okay, it's like they take away your devils, but they also take away your angels as well. And it blocks that process.
So this is the same with indigo children and crystal children. These very evolved children that come into the world, are born into the world, and they're very, very evolved. And they're up earlier in the morning before their mothers, and they might be awake all day doing stuff, and they're still awake when the parents go to bed at night, and they're always creative, always asking questions, curious, etc. And lithium is the one that they give to slow them down.
Lithium carbonate. Yeah, that was quite an important time for me. You know, I think it's important for all of us to make the connection between individual neuroses and some of the things that might be blocking us from soul issues and social problems, and how when you have a collection of people that are packing around a lot of garbage, it actually creates a potential for hostility and sort of not seeing clearly, not listening to what other people have to say. We're seeing that in America right now. I mean, there's so many things that have I see you shaking your head.
Skyrocketed.
But you know, between the GMOs and the chemtrails and the
Antifa riots.
Yeah, all of that. It's got everybody worked up to this terrible point of anger that is likely to turn into violence. And there are many sites that I've seen in the last week or so where they're talking about either staying inside or carrying a weapon when you go out and that sort of thing after the election. That's a serious sign of social breakdown.
Yes, because I believe we will soon be seeing this collapse of people's confidence in government. Here we come. Which in the world of global communications is more contagious than that of a virus. And so this is where we're at the moment. And we're communicating. We're getting close on 10,000 hits a week on Green Planet FM. And I just want to say, please, people, share this with your friends. Share this whatever country you are, wherever you may be. Keep sharing, 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 because this is the only way we're going to communicate that we are one global family, doing our best to waken up to our connection as this family. And it has to be led by our heart and our higher vision of what we can do for our children and grandchildren.
Yeah, because we've come into a time where technology is assuming the status of a god. We know that the transhumanists' goal is to overcome death. They want to be gods. And we've been warned, Tim. I mean, it's all hidden in plain sight, like these movies and all, you know, Batman and one thing and another. We all have to assume a share of the responsibility for giving up our power to these techno high priests without really comprehending their motives and their values. And that's happening at this time because it's a shift in the ages, okay? And like Pisces, Aquarius is a symbol, okay? And symbols are frequencies. They're used to send us information. And they're being used to manipulate us by sending us signals of coming actions, okay? And these actions are all about social engineering. That's what's going on right now with this bid for the New World Order through the Great Reset. And COVID, I don't deny the reality of the virus.
Yes.
And some claim that it's a bioweapon, but whatever the case, it's basically a distraction from some of the other stuff that's going on that's going to change humanity in ways that we're not going to like. It's all about controlling people by manipulating their energy and engineering consent. I think it's the basis of predatory programming. And it literally is a form of black magic. Subliminal mind control. It's a shell game of misdirection. And they're expert at it. They make their plans based on artificial intelligence. They have strategies laid out. And they're using AI to drive the tactics behind this global chess game. And it's because it's changing very rapidly right now. And one of the transhumanist goals, as you know, is to connect the human mind to artificial intelligence. And what they're going to do is they're going to be experimenting on profoundly autistic children. And the number of autistic children is ramping up exponentially right now.
That's right. Well, the other thing, too, is they've got all these supercomputers, supercomputers. They're doing over a trillion computations a second, and they're running all these end games. They're putting all this information in, and they're running all these scenarios to see where it's all going. And they're doing it with everything, be it computer modeling for 10 billion people on the planet, and we're consuming so much, and we're all this sort of thing. And they're playing these models out all the time, and nobody's talking about it at all, people. They're keeping it all quiet from you about what these supercomputers are doing, and they're all linked up.
Well, Tim, let's hope that when this show goes into the supercomputers that it'll blow a few circuits. Yeah. Okay, this is Soul Capture, and it's Endgame. They want to control us. Already we're seeing the result of lockdowns all over Europe and how the press, the police, the politicians have been bought to enforce this and to keep us in fear. And that's the opposite of where we want to be. Fear, we want to be in love, okay? And I know that, well, I think this is a critical moment in history.
Definitely is.
Yeah, it's no longer about reason and dialogue and finding common ground. It's just about power over and control. If they succeed, we can expect total surveillance, predictive programming, universal basic income, and a lot worse, I reckon. These agendas, the technocracy, the transhumanist agendas, are soul-destroying. We are to grow out of our adolescent aspiration to play God and control everything. Technological ambition has to be scaled down. I mean, Tim, we can't compete with all that firepower, but if we spot something, we have to share the information widely. It may get put down as conspiracy theory or banned from social media by the tech oligarchs, but it shines a spotlight on the way they think, and it can alter their plans. Now, I can't help wondering if any of them are aware that they took a wrong turn somewhere in their past and believe it's too late to go back. But it's sort of like Macbeth at Dunsinane, you know, come wind, blow rack, at least we'll die with the horns on our back.
Yes, Bill, well, this is it. This is our time. Everybody here across Auckland, in Aotearoa, New Zealand, and globally, the great reckoning is on its way, and the best place for us is to remain in our heart, stand strong, kia kaha is the Māori word, and keep our inner candle burning, our ahi in our stomach, our fire in our tummy.
And listen to the voice in the soul. Listen to your guides. Listen to your higher intelligence, whether it be in your gut or in your solar plexus or anywhere else, but not in your mind.
Bill, thank you, brother. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Pleasure, Jim. It's been wonderful. Enjoyed it very much.
Hello, dear listeners. Hi, it's Tim again. I'm back online. We found that through the edit, we had more time than we thought we had. And so Bill's at his home now. I've phoned him, and he's going to add a postscript to this fantastic interview that he did with me this morning. And I feel that we want to be able to share a little bit more. So Bill's on the line, and I want to say, kia ora, hello, Bill.
Hello, Tim.
Bill, that was such a fantastic interview. We're going to have a lot of people say that it was really, really good. So, Bill, was there anything else that you just wish to add as a final flurry?
Okay, Tim. Well, I think that this is actually very serious business, because as more and more people find themselves in a difficult position, they're going to be what we call beside themselves. And that sort of literally means that their soul, they've separated from their soul. And at this time, I know that there's a growing soul sickness. We see it in people who know the right, but do the wrong. And in some cases, the wrong means doing nothing and just saying, oh, well, you know, he'll be right. We also see it in spiritual amnesia, people forgetting who they are, what they're here to do. And there's also something that we call soul loss, which is really quite serious. And that occurs when we suffer physical or emotional trauma. A part of the soul flees from the body to survive the experience. So with every new incident, our essence and our vitality grows weaker. In psychological terms, soul loss is called dissociation. It's a natural protective mechanism that occurs when we become disconnected from the source of our vitality. So your soul is always there in the background of your life, but it's not always accessible due to psychological traumas or abuses and other kinds of blockages. So dissociation is essentially a survival mechanism that can kick in for a number of reasons. Now, what are those reasons? There's a lot of them, actually.
Yes.
Any form of abuse, whether it be physical, sexual, emotional, mental, or deep-seated addictions, substance dependency, eating disorders, gambling, things like that. Near-death, out-of-body experiences, entering a relationship without strong personal boundaries, which results in an unhealthy relationship and loss of personal power. That happens a lot. And those can be emotions that are too powerful for the psyche to integrate. And when that happens, the soul longs to express feelings but holds back out of fear. Fear of reprisal, fear of the depths of pain that will be released. And what's, I think, important to realize, Tim, is that a soul or a fragment of a soul that's lost or strayed or stolen, and I literally mean stolen, can be retrieved. The process is thousands of years old and the methods to retrieve it are traditional. I've actually been through the process. I had a psychic attack in 1979 when I was a charter skipper in the Caribbean, and it had a huge impact on me, and I carried the burden for years. I actually had a healing from a Tuhoi shaman many years later, and it was a powerful release. In shamanic cultures, of course, here in New Zealand, the shaman is called a tohunga, which is kind of a doctor who heals through access to spirit. And so I think that people need to be aware that there are ways to deal with this. That's one of them. And I mentioned flowers. As Tim said, we should let our candle burn brightly. And to do that, we must be clear of emotional baggage. And flower essence therapy is a very, very effective and relatively inexpensive way to do that. So if anyone is interested, they can call me at 0274-850-038. 0274-850-038. Be happy to talk to you.
Thank you, Burl. Thank you. Have a lovely evening and good to go, bro.
Thank you. Thanks, Tim.
You may not believe this, but this is a postscript on top of this postscript. And I'm going to come through to you because I want to be able to talk to you about Rupert Sheldrake. And I visited him a number of times. Rupert Sheldrake of Sheldrake.org. Sheldrake.org. He has written a book. It's about phantom limb research, that people who have had an amputation or lost a limb in an accident, they have found that they can still feel it long after that limb has been taken away. And another one is the feeling of being stared at, that you may have a friend, very close friend, you see from a great distance and they're talking with other people or something like that, and you stop and stare at them, and then after a few moments, 20 seconds or longer, they turn around and they stare directly at you. He, as a Cambridge scientist, equates this to the fact that we have a soul and souls are connected. Check it out. And his book, Dogs Who Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home. Decide to network. Use every letter you write, every conversation you have, every meeting you attend, every email you send, and remember, even Facebook, to tweet and to express your fundamental beliefs and dreams. Affirm to others the vision of the world you want. Network through thought. Network through action. Network through love. Network through the spirit. You are the center of a network. You are the center of the world. You are a free, immensely powerful source of life and goodness. Affirm it, spread it, radiate it. Think day and night about it, and you will see a miracle happen. the greatness of your own life in a world of big powers, media and monopolies. But of 7.8 billion individuals, networking is the new freedom, the new democracy, a new transparency, and a new form of wholeness and happiness. This originated by Dr. Robert Muller, Chancellor of the World Peace University in Costa Rica, Central America. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 500 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. Please come and